Keynote address at the New York City Green Festival, 1 p.m. Javits Convention Center. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59. Coming up next, it's Positively Revolting.
Hi, this is John Shuck. On The Beloved Community, I speak with Caverly Morgan. She's the founding director of Peace in Schools. In 2014, Peace in Schools launched the first four-credit high school mindfulness course in the nation, right here in Portland. I also speak with Dinah Ramey Berry. Dr. Berry is an associate professor of history and African diaspora studies at the University of Texas at Austin. She's the author of The Price for Their Pound of Flesh, The Value of the Enslaved, From Womb to Grave in the Building of a Nation. Catch The Beloved Community Friday morning at 9 on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of We Can Listen, The Power of Being Heard. This is a monthly event series at the Old Church in Portland. This month, it takes place on Tuesday, June 13th at 7 p.m. This month's program will draw on stories created through Portland Story Theater's Urban Tellers series and will feature the real, true stories of immigrants and refugees now living in Portland. Storytellers include Zara Abukar from Somalia, Lily Ningsa from Indonesia, Eva Rodder Johnson from Venezuela, and more. Again, that's We Can Listen, Tuesday, June 13th at 7 p.m. at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world you cast your vote. They make our legs, and we take back you with the upper creature.
So done. They're flying back to that Mexican border to pay all their money and wade back again. My father's own father, he waded that river. They took all the money he made in his life. My brothers and sisters came working the fruit trees. They rode on that truck till they lay down and died. Goodbye to my one.
Good morning. This is Linda Olson Osterlund with Positively Revolting here on KBOO Community Radio. That is Joan Baez you're hearing in the background, and Woody Guthrie's song, Deportee. I want that to go out in honor of all the farm workers that are flooding our state as we finally begin to have our crops come in. You know, every year we wouldn't have our farmers markets if we didn't have farm workers, many of them who didn't get papers to come into this country, but were definitely invited by the agriculture that needs them to be able to get food to our pantries, food to our homes. So, as I said, this is Linda Olson Osterlund for Positively Revolting Radio. Lynn and Ani will be gone one more week after this. Today's topic is hate rising. I want to take a second just to thank Derek Crooks, our AM News and Public Affairs Director, for doing some research on this story and for producing. If you do go to kboo.fm and look at the schedule for today, you can learn a lot about this topic from what he has put on the web under Positively Revolting. And I want to thank him for that. It's always great to have staff who has your back and help support you, bring the radio out to you that we want to. So today we're talking about hate rising. Many of you maybe participated in the activities this last weekend, but I want to talk about, you know, I was shocked when I think it was the night after, Sunday's event, so maybe Monday night, or it could have been Sunday night, I don't recall which, but I saw this story on the regular news, which I don't even usually watch, but it was about a man, a Hispanic man, a Mexican man by his own identification, who had been run off the road by not a typical road rager. This truck came up and started tailgating him close and then went up beside him and literally pushed his vehicle off the road and then pulled his own vehicle up. And when he got out, he ran up to the man and started yelling, get out of my country, you Mexican. That's a quote from Armando, the victim of this. Go back to your country or I'll kill you. He went back into his car, according to Armando, got a gun, brought it back out, pointed it to the man's head and said, get out of our country or I'll kill you. And then he hit him and fled. So another, you know, another hate crime, another violent attack that's so close to could have been a death. You know, when you're willing to put a gun to someone's head, you're just really a trigger away from their death. And so I want to talk about this rise of hate crimes. It continues unabated. In the week before the demonstration and after the murders on Max, another Max train driver was also assaulted and screamed at by a man talking about his First Amendment rights, and he actually pummeled the Max train operator, who had minor injuries as a result, but I'm sure quite mental trauma. So what I want to talk about with you guys out there is, what have we done about getting through with all these hate crimes? How much is really going on here in Portland? And what are we going to do in the future to really diminish this, put an end to it? We don't want any of this kind of thing going on in our state, though it has been going on for a long time. I want to put the number out there for you. We don't have any guests today. You are our guests, you the listeners. So the call-in number is 503-231-8187. I want to hear from you about this subject, you know, just anything around it that you would like to talk about. I know that I was looking at the Southern Law Poverty Law Center's statistics, and there's been something about 1,094 hate crimes in the first 34 days of the Trump presidency, an incredible upsurge. And there's also a long list of hate crimes here in Portland that I will talk to you about that have all been since January this year. So we need, it's a huge issue we need to address, and it isn't just here and there, it's throughout our state. So please give me a call at 503-231-8187. We need to talk about this. I know that there's been many times when I've mentioned discrimination against people of color in Oregon that other people of goodwill have said, well, it's not really that bad, is it? And for some reason, some way, had avoided learning about discrimination that's in every area of life in Portland. I also, the day before, I would say last Saturday, I was walking in my neighborhood, an inner southeast neighborhood, and ran into our dogs, met me and another woman. And she asked the question, I wonder why these hate groups are coming to Oregon. And it became apparent that she has no historic knowledge of Oregon's racism. I also had people down at the rally who were observers of it, not participators, ask me similar questions. So what's your experience about that? Do people really realize that there is discrimination and racism going on in our law enforcement, in housing, in jobs, in buying a car, in pretty much anything you can think about? We do have a caller on the line. Camilo, thank you for calling in this morning.
Hi. I have a very specific question I want to ask the public, and specifically the organizers of Good in the Hood. On the Facebook pages, there's a copy of a letter shown that is a death threat to the organizer and to people attending the rally, and it says essentially that they're going to shoot niggers. So there's no response in terms of what people are willing to do, what does the organization Good in the Hood expect or desire for support from the community. And I mean, I've only seen one person say just show up, but you know, I really don't know what is the best way to respond to this. And if there's anybody in the organization that's listening, please call in and let us know. If there are other people who have ideas, let's try to show our support for this.
Well, yeah, you know, Good in the Hood, I believe KBOO's a sponsor of Good in the Hood. We have been in the past, certainly, and, you know, and had a presence there. Good in the Hood's a whole day event or a weekend event?
I think it's one day.
Yeah, and it's a pretty big deal. It's got lots of vendors and lots of food and lots of music and lots of good things, I guess is what I want to say. And it is known as a black event.
And somebody posted that it's an official part of the Rose Festival event.
Well, it may be. I didn't know that, but I certainly we could see that. But thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. And so I think you're right. I'd love to hear from anyone with the organization. I used to know people who did some of the catering for it, but I can't reach out to them right this moment. But I do want to look into that further, and I want to hear what other people want to say about that. You know, maybe we need to have a lot more of us show up just to be there to counter anything that might happen. I think it would be up to the organizers of the event whether they wanted, you know, what do they want from us, the public, and what do they want in terms of support around this. But it sounds very important, and I really appreciate you for calling, Camilo.
Yeah, there's also a report that it's being investigated by the FBI and police.
Okay, so there is an investigation going on. What's the date of Good in the Hood? Do you have that in your...
I think it's the 17th, but I'm not exactly sure.
Okay, we'll try to look that up and find out for sure. And, you know, and if you hadn't heard about this and you hadn't ever attended Good in the Hood, I want to encourage you to do that. I mean, it really is great food, great jewelry, great music, and it's you know, local. It's all local. You don't get to have that every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think that... You know, we just need to be available and willing to show our support, whatever the organizers request.
Okay. I just got word from my engineer that it's June 23rd through 25th.
Okay.
Okay. And that's Good in the Hood. And, you know, if you've got a computer, you can Google that. And, of course, there will be more announcements about it coming up. But this issue will definitely follow up. I'm also a member of the KBOO Evening News team. And I'll bring this to our news team director as well to help follow up on. So thank you very much, Camilo, for letting us know about this.
Okay. Good day. Good day.
Thank you. And so thank you very much, Camilo. I'm hoping there's others of you about to call in right now. It's 503-231-8187. If you need to hear a little bit more to sort of stimulate your thoughts about hate crimes in this area, I'm going to look at this list that starts with January. It's incidents that have happened through March 2017. And these are Oregon crimes. So 124, Ashland, neo-Nazis flyers plastered around Ashland. 125, Ashland, though that's January 25th, Ashland. Black truck with swastika placard reading, "The Greatest Story Ever Told." Photograph driving around Ashland. 126, January 26, Ashland, police arrest a Medford man who was posting pro-Nazi flyers. The 29th in Portland, five males enter the Mount Covenant Church and disrupt services espousing hate for immigrants and refugees. And on January 30th in Portland, a Latino man was assaulted by a skinhead outside Zupan's. He also made racial and homophobic comments during the attack. That's just the month of January, folks. And I believe that there are many of these that go unreported in terms of being official reports. I know back in the 70s, the late 70s, my husband worked in a steel mill. And in that mill, Nazis would put swastikas over left-wing political people's lockers, but they also would do that over anyone of color. They would put Nazi swastikas. Sometimes they would bash in the lockers. Sometimes they would pour acid in the lockers and totally trash them. One of my husbands was the guy that worked right inside the foundry, you know, right inside where the furnace was. And there was another man who was supposed to pull a signal that said, hey, the big bucket full of metal is coming. That man was a Nazi. And one day, my husband, just for no reason, ducked, and that bucket went right past him. That Nazi claims he didn't mean to threaten, that he wasn't intending to threaten my husband. But if my husband hadn't had the instinct to, you know, duck down, he would have been thrown into that furnace. I can't tell you what that would be. So I know there's been a long history of this kind of racism, this putting up notes, these, you know, threatening people. But I'll ask you to talk to me about problems that you've seen at work. Have you ever observed this kind of activity going on at your own work? I know I have a couple other articles here. There was a jury award of $750,000 to a black worker for racist incidents at Daimler Truck. So I'd heard about this incident, and I looked it up, and darn, there were about 10 other articles about Daimler and other people who had sued for the same kind of discrimination, including having a truck drive past with a noose, Nazi insignias, and much more. I do believe we have a couple other callers. Bill, thanks for calling in this morning.
That's me?
Yep, that's you, if you're Bill.
Okay, hi, yeah.
Hi.
Hey, wanted to call with two things. First of all, I do not believe in uncontrolled borders where just anybody should be able to cross without any kind of background check or anything like that. I do support immigration, but I think it should be done legally. And I think it makes it easy, if you're undocumented and legally unsure, it makes it easy for you to be exploited and used. And as long as we keep promoting that class of people, then they're going to be exploited, and that undermines all of us. The other thing, hate crimes and hate. I come from the East Coast, the home of Johnny Appleseed, where most of the people were white. And I had, at 16, I had hardly ever seen anyone other than maybe a few people from Puerto Rico who weren't French or Italian or Irish or English. But at that same age, 16, I went out to the Standing Rock Reservation to work on a Episcopal Church mission out there.
Pardon, you can't say that. And so I think we've lost you, Bill. We have to be really careful about language on this station. You know, there are FCC regulations, so please don't use cuss words. I'm sorry Bill isn't still on the line. I wanted to say something when he said, but he wants it to be legal and that class of people, it's always going to be exploited. Well, yes, people who are undocumented will probably face greater exploitation. But for so many people, ask anybody familiar with our immigration law, it is not set up to allow the number of workers we want in this country. Agriculture wants, service industry wants, you know, the tree planting industry wants. And so people come to this country because they need, they have needs in terms of being able to feed themselves and their family. And I have worked in farm worker camps, and I do know this is true. They leave their children with their mothers and come up here paying a couple thousand dollars just to get up here. I met one woman who then she broke her wrist and had to pay $1,500 to fix her wrist and had no money to go home or couldn't work in the fields. I don't blame any of what happens to the average worker who comes to this country under those circumstances for coming undocumented. if I was hungry and needed to feed my children, I would do what I needed to do. And these aren't people coming to commit a crime. They're coming to work very, very hard. And by the way, pay taxes and all those other fees for their work. So I want to get that in there. If anybody else wants to talk about that issue, I'm certainly willing to have you call in and let's talk about it. I do believe we have another caller on the line right now. Shelby, thanks for calling in today.
Hi. I just wanted to talk a little bit of talk to you a little bit about what you're saying just now about undocumented immigrants, and I think you're very correct that people do what they need to do in the circumstances that they have. But I also want to make the point that we should also work for migrant rights and not
be satisfied with the way it is.
Exactly.
Yes, of course. Yep, I agree.
Yeah. I am new to Oregon, actually. I am from St. Louis, which is another very segregated city, which is something that I've noticed about Oregon and its neighborhoods as well. I'm working with the Boys and Girls Club out here, and I think to your point of hate crimes and hate in Oregon, it's been very apparent to me that Oregon is a very white city, as has been touted in the news over and over again.
Just go walk around Seattle and then come back and walk around here, and it's visually different.
Exactly. A lot of cities are just, there's just more color. And it's something that even my mother noticed, who is of a generation that doesn't really like to talk about race. And so I think that one thing that we could do to stop things like this is, don't be afraid to push your boundaries. Don't be afraid to go to the neighborhoods that aren't the ones that you're used to. And don't support things like gentrification and going to those hip little coffee shops. Support the community that's already there and invest in that community rather than breaking into communities that need the support.
I think that's really good advice, smart advice. You know, it may be nice to go into a brand new hip upscale place. So I don't like how metal and plastic they are, but nonetheless, it could be fun and they might have a great new $3 donut. But how about that donut shop that's, you know, maybe a half a mile away that's been there for 20 years and really makes great donuts for under a dollar?
Exactly. And I mean, that's something that I've noticed even working in the Boys and Girls Club with a lot of the staff here are young and they... And going to those places is cool and exciting. The places that are known to be cool and exciting aren't the ones that have been around there for a while and aren't the ones that that we need to be supporting, right? Because I think the biggest thing is supporting the communities of color that are already here so that they can grow and so that there's more diversity in Portland. I think that a way to decrease hate crimes is by increasing exposure to people who aren't like you.
Well, I think that's a really good point, Shelby. You know, I did some training in what they at that time called cultural competency, and one of the trainers, an African-American woman named Mrs. Sweet, who was from this area, from Portland. I think she worked for Northwest Natural Gas at the time, but she gave a workshop on deconstructing racism and how to get rid of it. And one of the things that she really recommended, which I thought was so wise, was she said, if you're white and you want to take apart your own racism, put yourself around people of color. Put yourself in a group that's almost exclusively people in color in which you are not in control and just be that. Begin to socialize in a place where you are clearly not the person in control. However, don't go into this. Doesn't mean you get to go in and be the boss at some place. This means just being a participant where you have to face your own perhaps discomfort about being the only or one of the onlys. You know, that's I had a friend of African American descent, and that's what we talked about. Like when her school kids were bused to white schools, they were the onlys, and how uncomfortable that can be. And so it, making yourself of the only and growing to know another culture from inside that, I found to be really, really good advice.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I also, just as a last comment, the people who are going to be doing that aren't the people who are going to be committing the hate crimes. But I think just making it more normal to have people of color around and just normalize that would go a long way.
Yeah, I think you. Thank you for that, Shelby. And I think we have a couple more callers. Dave, thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
Everyone knows what's going on. You know, everyone has their stories. But I want to go after the head of the beast. I have cousins in law enforcement, and that forces me to pay attention. I always have. I'm 56 years old, African American. When I saw on Channel 8 News the attempted dragging death of a young black man in Molalla, Oregon, after the lynching of James Byrd in 96, the police went on Channel 8 News and said, "We do not see a hate crime." And there was no rebuttal. Now, that's what I call macroaggression.
Yeah, macro.
And it leads to microaggression. And we need to discuss this.
I think that what you're saying is really important, because we see law enforcement over and over again deny crimes where they are and obviously put people in jail for longer sentences for crimes that they didn't commit or were minor crimes, really. I think the point you're making is really important. You know, I've wondered about part of this upsurge here in Oregon, if the relatively minor response that the federal government gave to those who occupied the Malheur Refuge, I wonder how much that didn't encourage more of that ilk to come here, because despite
the point.
Them whining and crying, they got off with nothing. I promise you, if I went down and spray painted a corner of the federal building, I would do more time than any of them.
Exactly. See, and that's what led the guy to attack the people of color on the train. Subconsciously, it was okay.
Yeah, he was unleashed in some way. Yeah. And I do believe that the Trump presidency and Breitbart and that whole huge push has really increased it as well. There's been like a cork.
It started with Obama, okay? Because like I said, I'm African-American and I'm 56. And I lost all of my friends. I don't care what color you are. You are not my friend, because I was telling you that you shouldn't vote for Obama because we are not ready. And that's where it starts. That's where it started. So that's enough for me.
All right. I'll leave that. I'll let that hang. We have other people on the line. Thank you very much for calling in. We have Paul on the line.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, so I don't want to do the ageism thing. I'm 60. I've been arrested during the Latin American fight against Reagan. I've been a reporter. I'm working as a social worker. But, you know, the comment that the one gentleman said about, you know, you have to be documented, I mean, that's absurd. I mean, this country, we all are illegal aliens. If we're not from this country, that was a bumper sticker we had during the Latin American time. In terms of the hate crimes, it's interesting that we're bringing this up when African Americans are killed and murdered by police by the up to 1,000 a year. We're a police state, and we have Supreme Court rulings where the minority, Sotomayor, is just shocked at the powers we've given the black-clad police. The police have a right to stop you, to go into your homes. And there's a couple Supreme Court rulings that speak to the fact that this country's the hate crimes in this country's sort of demonic Nazi roots, it's all at the feet of the police. And so when you empower these police forces to have such great mobility power to arrest people, to detain people, I've been detained many times. There's no reason why the lone wolves and those creeps that are racist would feel empowered themselves. So this has been going on. The black community, the Latino community, they've been feeling this for decades. So now the white community feels the pain that minorities have been feeling for, you know, over 200 years in this society. So,
well, you know, I also think if the response to what happened on the MAX train is true to some aspect of Portland, that they were also responding to attacks on two girls who were, one who was identified as African-American and the other who had a hijab on. And so I think that goes a little bit further. I think we want to say, oh, you know, good. You know, the first response wasn't just to ignore them or to deny what happened to them or, you know, something else. So I felt heartened by that response. Did you?
And I did. And I think that we, as educators, we should be training young people how to not only defend themselves rhetorically, but I think the problem with liberalism is it's a pacification. I think that when somebody's coming into your home with a bat, that you should learn how to defend yourself. And when somebody's coming into a MAX with, and I'm on the MAX a lot, with those kind of attitudes that this Christensen had, I think we need to empower people to be able to defend those that are being attacked and not lose their lives. Losing your life is heinous. And, you know, I think that there's a problem with the fake left, that we want to be all consensus and pacific, but, you know, the Palestinians are dying because of our policies. Other countries are being invaded because of Americans' policies. And so when it comes to our shores, it's a little troubling, especially for white gentrified Portland. But we have to steal young people. They are the future. And this police state and this Trump, this fourth grade perverted president that is just the outcome of 40, 50 years of capitalism, I think these young people need better tools. And
yes,
going out and marching is just a teeny tool. There's no reason why that's bad, but that's not going to do, it's not going to do the trick. Teachers in Oaxaca pile tires up with lawyers and other citizens for a higher wage in their income. Other countries are willing to do a lot more than go around with peace flags and be kettled by a violent Nazi-bred police department, which we have. And you speak of Seattle. Seattle has police that are on YouTube that are doing to Heil Hitler. So whether they're a diverser city or not, the police in this country are traditionally, hands down, very racist and very militaristic. And I used to be a police reporter in El Paso, in Tucson, in Spokane. So, I mean, I
yes,
like
I'm not going to disagree with you even a tiny bit. I think you're completely accurate, whether you're in a small town as well. I grew up in some small towns, and they go after Native Americans there because they don't allow other people of color to live in the same town. But the reservation's nearby, so they'll go after them. I think that is and has historically been the role of the police. I was going to say there were a lot of younger people who helped, a lot of people from PSU who helped coordinate and be part of Sunday's rally. And I think in the process of doing those things, young people learn a lot. You learn a lot when you're organizing and having to argue and talk about it all the time. I'm going to thank you for your call. We've got other callers on the line. Before I go to the next caller, however, I do want to let you know what's coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9, Beloved Underground talks to the founding director of Peace in Schools about the 4-credit high school mindfulness course. Then the author of The Price for Their Pound of Flesh, The Value of the Enslaved from Womb to Grave in the Building of a Nation. That sounds like a very interesting and apropos topic. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interview, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Always an important show in my point of view because we learn what's happening a little bit further south from us and also get different national correspondents. At 11, The Digital Divide discusses how corporations collect and filter data about how you use the internet with John Chaney Lippold, the author of We Are Data, algorithms and the making of our digital selves. I just got to say, we have a great lineup again at KBOO. We do most mornings. I'm always so proud to be part of this station. I want to thank all of the KBOO members for your generous support. You know, if you haven't already become a member, we came a little bit short on this last fundraising drive. We could sure use you to become a member now or donate. So you can do that by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. It's in a big red banner at the right-hand side of the homepage. And so now let's go back to our callers. Laura, thank you for calling.
Hi, yes. Part of the anti-immigrant sentiments that I hear that underlie a lot of the hate crimes, a missing piece for me, and maybe it's just that I'm not hearing it, but a missing piece for me is that part of the flood of immigrants into this country is due in part to the fact that we've destabilize their countries, either through war, meddling in their politics. I mean, it goes back to overt colonial conquest. I mean, there's a long history of the United States mucking around in other people's affairs, environmental degradation, now it's climate change. There are a lot of reasons why people are trying to come here, not necessarily because they want to, but because we've basically ruined their home. And I rarely hear this. I think Americans forget this piece as to why everyone's coming here. So I just want to put that into the mix.
Well, I really appreciate that, Laura, and I think it's important what you're talking about. I think right at this moment, KBOO doesn't have a really good person who's been focused on Latin America and Mexico and what's driving people up here. And so we don't get as much news as we might want to have about that. And I would like to see us have more. I do want to point up Flashpoints, though. If you don't listen to Flashpoints regularly, you might want to tune into that on a regular basis, because he has some very good correspondents that are from Latin America and South America and Haiti, and you can hear about what's going on there. But I think, you know, we've got a little challenge here now for myself and Derek Crook and others who want to have the best news, and we should pick up more on that. I do read a little bit about it, so I'll give you a little bit of information that I've gotten recently. In Honduras, the gangs are so bad that when the kids get up here, they can tell you the stories of the gangs threatening to kill them, following them from home every day, kidnapping their cousins and sisters and women. And those gangs are they're an interesting and direct result of U.S. involvement, and actually Hondurans being in jail here in the U.S. and going back home. They actually brought at least one gang back to Honduras. But the actual conditions in most of Latin America are countries that are completely dominated by the U.S., and if they have an elected government that the U.S. doesn't find to its liking, it will stage a coup and overthrow them, and that's not an exaggeration. So I think the topic that Laura brought up is really important. I believe we have other callers, so let's go to the call-in line. Emily, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. I come from, my mother's an immigrant from Korea, and I have firsthand experience of the discrimination that she faced growing up. But one of the things that's really beautiful that she taught me is that we're irresponsible as individuals to evolve ourselves. And I think part of the problem right now with this kind of wanting racial equity is that we follow only our likes and not really our dislikes. And it can get really uncomfortable when you're confronted with other cultures and other ideas. And I think that we need to kind of follow this discomfort and really open dialogues in safe environments. And a great example is here in Portland, there's a yoga studio called The Bhakti Shop in Southeast. And I just went through a yoga training there, and they had an equity program where we got to really sit down together and talk with people of color and hear both sides, and in a place that's really safe. And what it does is you begin to realize that we're all the same, like 99% of the time. So if we could find this common ground, I think there'd be less fear. And then we take responsibility for our own actions and our minds, and we evolve together as people, because none of us can heal unless all of us heal together. And I think that it really begins with ourselves as individuals.
Well, I find it really interesting that they had an equity program, and I agree with you. We do need to evolve. We need to push ourselves into the places where we're uncomfortable. But I find that really great that they had an equity program, and here in at KBOO, the volunteers, we have what's called the Beloved Community, and we have a study group that meets every month, but also training that's going on in that. And I think we're seeing that there's more and more of this kind of thing going on. I was at a, this will sound even really odd, I was at an astrology conference, and an astrologer from here is also an activist, and as a white activist supporting the Black Lives Matter movement, she had made up a whole bunch of like sort of little cartoon zines about white privilege, and they were hitting on all sorts of points, and they were interesting, and she put those all out at an astrology conference in Seattle, and I found that really interesting too, because I think it means that you know, people are taking up the call that they have to do something to educate their fellow white people about discrimination and privilege.
I agree, and I think in these kind, as long as we take responsibility, and then again, like you were saying earlier with one of the other callers, to support support anything you can that is about racial equity. You know, yoga is also about white privilege, especially sure. here in Portland, and to have an equity program. And not only does this particular yoga studio have equity program for their training, but they also offer scholarships to people of color in order to take yoga training, so they can go out and teach their communities. And I think it's just like, if we begin there, how can we not spread that out further and further? And I think that's a really beautiful thing, and we should find hope in that instead of thinking like, oh God, things are so terrible. And because it's hard right now, it's really, really
sure,
hard.
Sure, it's very hard. It very hard to keep mm-hmm. your head up, you know, in what was a very long and cold winter. Well, thank you very much for calling
thank
in.
You.
All right, our next caller is Richard. If you hear me pausing, that's because I can hear our wonderful AM News editor when he tells me who's next. It's Richard. You're on.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm always, first of all, I'm always very happy when you're hosting a show. I enjoy your programs a lot.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
The comment I want to make concerns the man that killed two other men on the MAX train.
Mm-hmm.
When he first appeared, and I saw him on television, he made a comment that I thought was very interesting. He said that he's been accused of being a terrorist, but he's not a terrorist. He's a patriot. And I think that gives a new slant on the word patriotism.
Well, yeah, it's not patriotism as I know it, is it?
No. That's all I had to say.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, hiding behind that, hiding your hatred behind a red and white and blue flag doesn't make it not hatred. Let's go to the next caller. It's Karen. Thanks for calling, Karen.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to just bring up a few points regarding immigrant justice and our responsibility. Our foreign policy has been very destructive in Central America and elsewhere. And a time period I'm familiar with was the period when El Salvador was having its civil war, and the CIA trained Roberto Dobuisson's death squads in El Salvador,
mm-hmm.
Which persecuted and murdered many people and resulted in massive destabilization of the population, so that in part were responsible for the reality that about 25% of El Salvador's population migrated or fled during the country's civil war. And a lot of those folks came here.
Mm-hmm.
And our corporate policy in Central America, Mexico, and elsewhere, it's been really damaging to workers and farmers. So a prime example is the behavior of Monsanto unleashed by NAFTA. Monsanto flooded Mexico with cheap grain, causing an estimated 2 million Mexican farmers to be driven out of business of corn production. So what do people do when they lose their livelihoods? They have to find a way to make a living, so they come here.
I think I mentioned a story earlier about a woman I met who, she lived on her own ranch, and they raised some beef and they raised some corn, but once the price for selling those dropped so low, they couldn't afford to grow beef and corn anymore. And she paid a couple thousand dollars to come up here to work in the fields out here in Washington County. And there was an accident at work and she broke her wrist. And of course, because she's not documented, the place that she was working for, you know, was hands off about it. And she was going to the hospital and being told she would be paying, you know, $1,500 just to start, with, of course, no money, and in a place where, you know, she knows no one and has no purchase. It's a very, very, very hard life to come up here in those circumstances, and you need to be driven to do it.
Yes, that is an example of the real cruelty that's built into the system. I wanted to bring up a few other facts about farm workers in the United States. I'm working with the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, so I just happened to have done some research recently. The life expectancy for migrant workers in the United States is on average about 49 years old.
Wow.
Okay, 49. Infant mortality rates among farm worker children are double the national average. And adult farm workers frequently experience depression related to isolation, economic hardship, and weather conditions. So as consumers, we benefit from the exploitation of undocumented workers. We pay lower prices, much lower prices, for agricultural products harvested by these workers. And the undocumented status makes workers especially vulnerable to corporate exploitation. So we are, as consumers, as citizens, we are responsible for helping these folks, for being part of the resistance to the way they're being treated, and to be like surges for African American folks, to be willing to listen to what they say they need and to work with them in ways that they are directing us to do. And I just wanted to say that also there's exposure to pesticides.
Yes, there's certain diseases and eye problems that come directly as a result of that.
Yes.
Probably as well as long-term neurological damage.
That's correct. Chlorpyrifos is neurologically damaging. The neonicotinoids are terribly damaging. So
when we want to get angry at these quote illegals, because I don't believe I'm with those signs that say that no person can be illegal, when we want to get angry at them, we ought to see if we want to walk a day in their shoes.
You're exactly right, 100%. Thank you so much for doing this.
And thank you for calling. I really appreciate you bringing in that information. I believe we have another caller on the line. Nope, our callers have all left, so that means you guys have a chance to call in now if you've been thinking about it. It's 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you. I want to really thank all the callers so far. You're bringing up important points and coming from different directions, and I think that's very important to do. You know, there are organizations in this area that you can volunteer with that do service out to farm workers. I worked with one, Western Farm Workers Association, that it's a mutual aid organization, and it works with farm workers who are just coming here for the first time, just literally came with very few belongings and are living out on the camps. There are many camps there's many camps all over. There's some just up on Columbia Boulevard, canneries there that you wouldn't know, that are mostly Spanish-speaking women who are in them. And so, you know, you can take an opportunity to go find out what's it really like. What's a farm worker camp look like? What kind of work do they do? What do they look like when they come out of the fields in the evening? And you know, just get a good strong dose of reality about how hard the work is. I know you hear my audience on KBOO are pretty progressive and you have an idea about this, but I'm just encouraging you to take a deeper look at that, and also always have a friendly handout to get to know people you otherwise wouldn't get to know. We do have one caller on the line. I want to put that number out there again so that you can call it as well for others. It's 503-231-8187. Arthur, thanks for calling.
Thank you. This is interesting. So I've been listening all this morning, and you know, I appreciate everything that everyone's saying, because Portland is a very white city. But I think the biggest thing for people to understand that it's a systematic thing, it's not really just like what people can do and what people can't do. It's like you have to change the system itself. So finding routes that will not only break down those barriers so that police officers aren't arresting more black folks than they are white folks, changing the system on how people get jobs, changing the system on, you know, just the welfare gaps and stuff like that. So it's more than just, you know, being nice to people. That's only going to be up front. You know, that's only going to change the upfront piece of, like, racism. And it's like, yeah, that's great, but at the end of the day, you're still not solving the major problem of what's going on, not only in the state of Oregon itself, but nationwide and around the world. So it's those things that I kind of wanted to speak about.
I think you're bringing a really important point that racism exists because the system in which it exists perpetuates it and allows it, whether it's not, you know, the laws for, when I say, you know, juries awarded a certain amount for racist incidents at Daimler Trucks, the laws that you have to go through to get through a court about that, I mean, there's hundreds of people like that worker who never made it through the courts because the courts are not set up to really deal with equity or to really address your, they're set up to protect the property of those who already own it. Or like the police force, we know now there's been enough statistics that have been proven over and over again that every level of police enforcement, from whether you're noticed by them and stopped to when a sentence is given, is discriminatory to people of color, in particular African Americans. And yet we get to sort of promulgate in our larger system the idea that that black men are more likely to be criminal than white men, or that actually I think most of the public thinks that African Americans use more drugs, when all the statistics that have ever been done says actually it's white people who use the most drugs, illegal drugs I'm talking here. So there's all these systems set up that if we don't, you know, if when Aquanis Hayes gets killed and they throw down a fake gun and don't even bother to tell you whether or not his fingerprints were on it to justify his killing, then that's the system at work. And until that stops, Aquanis Hayes' family, he's gone, and his family will not have experienced any equity, no matter how nice we are to them if we work with them. So I think that's the point you're trying to get us to see.
Yes, and that's also true. And then when it comes to that, they're like, well, this did happen. Well, we will give you some money just to bypass everything else. And it's like, what does money solve? Like, money doesn't solve the whole problem of what is going on and continuing to go on, you know, in this country. And it's, people think that, you know, minorities just need money to be okay. And it's like, no, we need opportunities. And it's like, opportunities are what's going to allow us to make our own money. You know, it's allow us to help those that need help in our own communities. And it's like, I'm not saying segregation, but I'm saying, like, you know, for people that have money and live in wealthy communities, they give back to those wealthy communities, keeping the money in that same community. So if you have a community with no money and you want them to give back to the community to make their community better, they can't. So it's like, how are you expecting them to help build themselves up when they have nothing to build up? You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I do. I agree with you. I think you're making very important points here, and that we're seeing how systems are being torn apart one by one, like taking apart the Voting Rights Act, part of that, so that people won't, that's a system. And now it's a more discriminatory system because part of what was put in place to prevent that discrimination has been taken away. And, you know, a lot of people don't like to talk about affirmative action. That's supposed to be a dirty word now, but affirmative action actions were put in place exactly to address discrimination that's systemic and ongoing, and it's the only way to counter it, because a lot of discrimination isn't a person saying the N-word or I'm not going to let any minorities work here. It's just doing that.
Mm-hmm. But I think nowadays affirmative action doesn't have the same stance as when it did before.
No, not at all.
I feel like affirmative action now is people saying, let me just find somebody to hire so that my staff looks better, instead of finding somebody who is qualified, who actually applied for the job, and who's well taken for the job, and give them the opportunity. It's like, no, it's like, this guy looks like he could fit, maybe, well, we'll just use him. And now it's like...
Tokenism is what you're talking about. It's tokenism.
Yeah. Tokenism. perfect example. So,
well, thank you very much for calling in. I really appreciate what you have to say.
No problem. Thank you.
And we have other callers on the line. Serge, thanks for calling. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Yes?
We're not hearing you. You can go ahead and speak.
Oh, right. I'd like to contribute a little bit about to this discussion. I am an interpreter, and so I help the immigrant community. I am very familiar with the kind of supports that the system has provided to the immigrant communities in the form of free legal advices, free bus passes, free food stamps, and all sorts of assistance in getting jobs and free schooling for the children, as well as free health care. I have witnessed a woman who is illegal to receive a free all costs taken care of by our government with a room, a suite that has its own private bathroom when she gave birth. And yet very little effort in her part to try to assimilate language.
Yeah, but you know, I want to just cut in there. Like when you're talking about free health care, you know, one, I have seen people turned away, but they're not allowed to. We have a law in here that no matter who you are, if you need health, if you need to go to the emergency room, if you're going to have a baby, they have to serve you. I would hate to live in a society where they didn't. In fact, I'm very unhappy that we have not allowed people to have driver's licenses who are not documented for being here. That only hurts us and them. So, you know, and when you say free food stamps, I know the food stamps, and you can make $12,000 and only get $18 worth of food stamps. So nobody's riding high on that. I know that there are special things depending on your visa if you're a legal immigrant and come into the country where you do have services that different immigrant organizations, and some of them have, there are some services that come with having that visa. But I can promise you it's not an easy life. I've seen people, there's a reason why people meet immigrants at the airport with bags of rice and other food, because it can be a very, very tough row to hoe. And those are the people who are invited here legally but aren't, say, the higher status ones that come with visas to work as engineers at Intel or something. So, I hear what you're saying. It looks like they get everything easy. Free school. Well, we all get free school. We want everybody who's in the U.S. who needs schooling as children to be able to get that. That it makes it sound like it's some extreme privilege, and maybe it is from where they come from. But here in the United States, we're supposed to all be able to get a free education. I want to go on to the next callers. And I do thank you for calling in, Serge. I appreciate your point of view. Tim, thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I'm from the Dalles,
mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to bring some attention to some positive things that are happening in the Columbia Gorge, the river, and the Dalles right now regarding...
Okay, we only have a couple of minutes, so go fast. Are you talking about the movement to support immigrants who are being deported through there?
Deported and detained at the NORCOR facility. We actually have been working with the Rural Organizing Project to bring attention to this. And we're expecting, and we need, about 7,000 to 8,000 farm workers to help with the fruit harvest beginning here in a couple of weeks. And so I just want to let people know that there's an ongoing daily demonstration outside of NORCOR in the Dalles. On Weber Street, and if anybody wants to come out and participate, we are actually making an impact. The county, and the local farms are becoming more and more aware of how the Immigration and Customs Enforcement is taking advantage of our local county facility
mm-hmm.
to house detainees coming from the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma.
Can you give us your organization name? I'm not remembering it.
It is Gorge Ice Resistance.
Okay, and can people find that on Facebook or on the web?
Yes, they can.
Yeah, I think that this is really important. These have been people that have... Do you know if they're particularly bringing hunger strikers from the Tacoma Detention Center down to NorCor to separate them?
Originally, that was the plan. They did that, and they brought five or six people from Tacoma the beginning of May, and they were hunger striking for 6 days in the Dalles. And we're offered some concessions, which ironically have not been delivered yet. Some of the people were transferred out. So that's kind of an ongoing saga, and we have been working with your news department to try to keep updated on that. But one positive thing I want to tell you about the Dalles is that Oregon Child Development Coalition has been providing child care and instruction at the local Catholic school for a number of years. So at the last day of school, OCDC takes over St. Mary's Academy entire campus and offers health care and education for migrants who come to pick fruit. So that's a real positive thing that happens in our community.
That's a very positive thing, and I appreciate you. Thank you so much for calling in with that. We are out of time now, so I want to thank all of you who have called in. I want to thank my engineer this morning and my AM News and Public Affairs Director, Derek Crooks. I want to thank all of you really out there in the listening audience. You're thoughtful. You're different from each other. You have different points of view to bring to us, and it's what makes KBOO's talk shows important, I think, in the morning for people to be able to tune into. So once again, this is Linda Olson Osterlin. We will have someone from, we'll have Ryan Lentz, the senior investigator of the Intelligence Project for the Southern Law Poverty Law Center, here next week. I'll be interviewing him at the start to talk about the movement going nationwide, the hate rising nationwide, and what's being done. Thanks again for listening to KBOO.
Tune in Thursday, June 15th at 10 p.m. for another special live remote broadcast from What the Festival at the Wolf Run Ranch. Once again, we'll be showcasing the musical and visual artists at this year's festival, with interviews, music, and interactions with the producers and the participants, exploring what makes this such a uniquely immersive and entertaining festival. Again, be sure to tune in on Thursday, June 15th at 10 p.m. for our What the Festival broadcast. More information can be found on the KBOO website under Community Events.
Check it out, baby. If the funk gets too hot for your rump, turn the other cheek.
Hello, KBOO members. Thank you for being part of our amazing community. It takes all of us to manage this great community resource, and the role played by the KBOO Board of Directors is essential. Here's an opportunity for you